Welcome to the Cutter's Notch podcast, named after the fictional small town found in several of author Michael DeCamp's books. This podcast explores anything related to creativity. You'll hear interviews with creative people, such as authors, artists, performers, and entrepreneurs, sprinkled with friendly banter about any number of topics, all of which attempt to view the world through the lens of creativity. Turn up the volume and enjoy the latest conversations in Cutter's Notch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Cutter's Notch podcast. I am your host, Michael DeCamp, and I'm your solo host today. My usual co-host, Nancy, is off tonight. She is actually, it's night as I record this. It may not be night where you're at right now, but she is off at kickboxing practice. She is a kickboxer. You may not know this about her, but twice a week she attends kickboxing classes. She's been doing that for a number of years now. This is why I'm always so remarkably nice to her. And I do whatever she says because she could kickbox me right into next week. So today I'm joined by my friend Malachi Quarles, also known as Hulander. And we'll talk about that more in just a little bit. Malachi is into music, and we're going to talk about that and his music in this episode. Now, before we do that, though, we have to do our creative indulgences. And since Nancy's not here to go first, I always make her go first, Malachi. Somehow or another, I managed to get her to go first for that. But when we get to the random question later, she always somehow seems to get me to go before her.
Okay. So,
but my creative indulgence for this week is a book I picked up. I recently had a book table at the Indianapolis Christmas Gift and Hobby Show at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. I had a book table there. I was selling my books. And next to me was a new novelist. He has one book that he was selling. I think he may have a couple of books that he's written, but one that actually is out there, and I picked it up. I thought it was interesting. It is a historical fiction. It's called A Rare and Dangerous Beast. The author's name is Lloyd Mullins. I'm going to read the back, although I'm going to butcher the name in here because it follows a Russian immigrant to the United States in the mid 1800s.
Oh, wow.
So it says, when Anatoly Lukyanov comes to America during the California Gold Rush, he is just a wide-eyed, idealistic Russian Buryat kid in love with the idea and ideals of America. He finds work as a cowboy along with a new American name, Nate Luck. Over the next 40 years, as a cowboy, a soldier, an adopted member of the Nez Perce tribe, a deputy sheriff, and a prisoner awaiting trial for murder, Nate experiences both the best and worst that America has to offer. Through it all, he fights for justice and freedom alongside, or against, iconic Westerners like Colonel John Shivington, Captain Silas Soule, Black Kettle, George Bent, Chief Joseph, Yellow Wolf, General Oliver Otis Howard, Nate Champion, Tom Horn, and many others. Nate's story is one of love and heartbreak, triumph and tragedy, high adventure and darkest horror. But even when things are darkest, Nate never loses his devotion to freedom, justice, and the potential of America. Interesting book so far. I'm about not quite halfway through. I'm maybe a third of the way in. I have to admit, Malachi, that when I started reading it, I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. It just seemed to, it's written in kind of an older style.
Oh, okay.
As if it's almost written as if it's an autobiography written by this Nate Luck mm-hmm. character, but it wasn't. He just wrote it in a way that it would have been maybe written in the 1800s.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit skeptical.
Yeah. It took some time to get into.
Yeah. But now I'm hooked. Now I'm really into it.
Yeah, it's got you.
Yeah, it's got me. Yeah. And the thing had me crying this afternoon.
Wow.
I was reading about the U.S. Cavalry massacring a Native American encampment. And it was just like, man, this is heartbreaking. The things that happened. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's my creative indulgence this week is this Rare and Dangerous Beast, a novel written by Lloyd Mullins. And as of right now, I would recommend it. How about you, Malachi? Do you have a creative indulgence for us?
I do have a creative indulgence. It might be a little left field, honestly, but my creative indulgence has been working on my 1995 Ford Bronco. And I know it's not a book or it's not a song, but for me, it's special in the same way of how I create music. And that this is a 30-year-old truck, right? And a lot of the parts are going out. And
30 years old, that's not very old.
Okay, well, okay. It's a decade older than how old I am. So that's just going to move on from that. But yeah, it's a 30-year-old truck. It's like lived in the rust bucket its whole life. So everything on the underneath is rusted. And recently I bought new suspension for it. So new tie rods and everything like that. And it's been creative in the sense that there are so many stock or aftermarket parts that I could use to replace this thing, right? But I have to think about it in terms of longevity, but also what makes sense right now for my budget. And it reminds me a lot of how I create music, right? And trying everything, or more so researching everything and trying to figure out what would work here, and then throwing stuff on and just figuring out with my own hands and kind of putting this Frankenstein part together just to make sure that it's the most safe thing, but also what's most true to me, right? And I could go with the $30 thing from AutoZone, or I could go with the, you know, for a little bit more money, $80 part for just, you know, something that will last me 30 more years. And it's more important than just the quick right now, because it's that special to me. This is, you know, the thing that my grandfather handed down to me. So I want to make sure.
I just
want to make sure that I handle it with care, because every time that I work on it, it feels like I'm hanging out with him. And as you know, last year, he passed away. So ever since then, it's been like he's here, right? And this is not only my daily driver, but something that I want to be able to pass on to my kids. And my mom was just geeking out the other day over watching a reel. And she was like, oh, Malachi would love this. And she was like, this grandfather gave his son the Bronco. And the son always picked up his child from school in the Bronco. And this is something that the child remember forever. And now the child's older and they're like, I remember when my dad picked me up in the Bronco and his dad got the Bronco for, and it's just like, I love that so much. And I want that to be, you know, the tale of my life. So it's really been a creative process, cause I'm not like Nahum, my brother, where cars is my go-to thing, but this is something that is still important to me.
So do you feel like that you have some skills when it comes to working on cars, or is this something you're learning as you go and this is part of the development and the fun of the effort?
It's definitely both, right? My dad and my entire, you know, paternal side of the family has worked on cars ever since, you know, I can remember. That's just who they are. And Nahum he's definitely always been more of the work on his hands, get outside and work on the truck kind of person. I've always been more of the artsy kid of the group. Mm-hmm. So some of it I know, some of it's like, okay, we're gonna righty tighty lefty loosey this. If we gotta change a steering pump, let's do it. If we gotta change a belt, change the oil, whatever. But trying to figure out, okay, how do I drop the suspension on this truck, right, so that the coil spring doesn't snap out and break my neck, but I'm also doing it in a way that's, you know, I'm not taking all day just to try to put this one shock on one side. It's been a learning process, and it's really fun watching YouTube videos, reading books. My grandfather, the one that gave me the Bronco, he had this old book of like Fix Your Bronco. And it was from like Ford used to make these books like Fix Your Ford. And I was reading through that. I was like, oh, this is so sick. Like this is, I love that Ford made a whole book for this. And it's like hardcover like this. Yeah, that's been really cool. So just diving into this, cause I have a really addictive personality with whatever I like. Anybody that knows me can tell you that, like, if I love something, then I'm just going to put 110% into it. So really digging deep and deep diving and setting aside money and, you know, let's just figure this out.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I saw I guess it was a reel, last week sometime, and interesting story. It was a man who had a hot rod back in, I don't know, not the 1970s or 80s. And it was like a 69 Torino or 69 Chevelle. Mm-hmm. It was like a classic hot rod car. Back when I was a teenager, these were the cars all the boys wanted.
Yeah.
You know, and they would set them up with big racing tires and four barrel carburetors.
I love it.
And just all the kind of the cool stuff I wasn't any good at. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of like you. I'm the artsy guy.
Yeah.
So at any rate, in this reel, the man got married and he was having a baby and he's like, I'm going to have to get rid of my hot rod. Mm. I'm going to sell the hot rod, take care of my kid. So he sold the hot rod and he got a minivan.
Wow.
And he went through his whole life and this baby grew up. And the baby knew that as a man, he found out, you know, how much his dad loved that car. So he started searching. He couldn't find anywhere where he could find that car. So he started piecing it together.
Wow.
And he built an exact replica of that car for his dad and surprised him with it.
That's
now, how awesome is that? I wish I remember the name of that.
Like, but that's just crazy on so many levels. The degree to which somebody can, like a child can love the parent. You always think about, you know, the parents, like, I brought you into this world. You are from me, whatever. Like, oh, duh, duh. But like the fact that a child can love their parent enough to give back, like this parent has sacrificed so much for you and you've seen love displayed in so many different facets your entire life from this one person that giving back in a, you know, a physical way of the car that you had and that you gave up for me so I could be cool and I could have diapers and walk around and be fed. Like that's awesome.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, let's get into talking a little bit about you, Malachi. So, you know, you're here primarily to discuss your music, but why don't you do a little intro of yourself? Maybe let the listeners know who Malachi Quarles is. Share about who you are.
I'm a pretty cool dude, I guess.
You are. You know, I've known Malachi since he was maybe, 15?
Yeah,
15. Something like that.
Yeah, we moved here.
Yeah, they moved here from Louisville, right?
Frankfort, so like 30, 40
Frankfort, Kentucky. Yep. You know, I usually ask people, how do you pronounce the capital of Kentucky, Louisville or Louisville?
So Frankfort's actually the capital.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that's where I nail it. Yeah. Good.
It's a test. Yeah.
It's a test and they always fail it.
Yeah.
And since you're from there, you knew the answer.
For sure.
But you moved up here with your family when you were around middle teens, 15-ish. Yeah. And we went to church together. Mm-hmm. And that's how Malachi and I got to know each other. I was always Mr. Mike. And I've been trying to get him to stop calling me Mr. Since. But I think it's been trained into him by his mother and it's hard to let that go. Yeah. But Malachi is my friend and I'm glad he's here. Go ahead. I interrupted you.
No, you're fine. I love the Frankfort kind of little test. I'm Malachi. I was born and raised in Frankfort, Kentucky until I moved here with my family to Indianapolis right before high school. Went to Franklin Central just down the road and have been doing music all my life. Started playing drums when I was 5 or 6, whenever the movie Drumline came out with Nick Cannon. And I wanted to be a drummer because that movie was amazing to me. And then when I got to high school, I joined the marching band. I'd been in concert band all my life. And so I got to marching band and I did not know this, but Indiana is super gung ho on the whole marching band, high school, all this stuff. Yeah. And Avon is really, really good. But
by the way, did you know that Nancy was a drum major?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. See, this is why we connect.
Yeah, there you go.
See what I'm saying? And did marching band for a little bit and then stopped doing that. Kind of fell out of the whole high school marching band thing. It just wasn't for me. The people weren't really for me anymore, just growing up. And so started making music again with my best friend Alexio and my brother and my other best friend Dorian. And we would all just go to Alexio's house random nights and be screaming and waking Miss Sheila up until 2 a.m. in the morning. And fun fact, Dorian has recorded a song while sleeping and everybody else went to sleep and he was just rapping on the mic and then he fell asleep. And at 5 a.m. Alexio woke up and there was like 3 hours of dead air. because he just fell asleep rapping. So that's the kind of bond that I have with my friends.
With me, it would be 3 hours of snoring.
See, he's a terrible snorer. I don't know how he was sitting in. He was sitting in a chair, like a computer chair, like we are now. And it would, yeah. So yeah, that's a fun fact. But that's the relationship that I had with my friends, to where music became more of a kind of a personal thing where I could actually touch it and maneuver the things that I was doing more so than just playing sheet music for concerts. And then when I got to the end of high school, I asked to get a bass. I was like, I want to buy the space, mom and dad. Can I buy the space? And the mom was like, you have to win track. You have to win the state championship in track, and then we'll think about getting you the space. So that, I guess, brings me to another kind of big part of my life, that I've ran track since sixth grade. And I was a hurdler and sprinter, and that took me from middle school all the way through college. And I got a scholarship to Georgetown University off of a track scholarship, where I was still a hurdler and sprinter. And I originally didn't even want to do track. My dad wanted me to, because all of his siblings did and he didn't. And I almost didn't give the permission slip back. I don't know if he knows this, but I did not give the permission slip back to the teacher at first, because I was just like, I don't want to run. I just want to play basketball. And fast forward, I'm over here not playing basketball anymore. I'm running track, and I won state championships for the 110 hurdles and 300 hurdles senior year. So that was 2019. Mm-hmm. Feels like a long time ago. And yeah. And so my mom was like, well, I guess we have no choice but to get to the base. And yeah, I picked up guitar the year after that. So that was COVID. So I picked it up a little bit, and piano a little bit. And yeah, I went through college and graduated with two degrees, one in political science. We call it government there, but it's political science, it's poli-sci, and the other in music and media studies. And then from there, last year, I was working at SiriusXM. Didn't really work out there. I was working part-time, and DC/Virginia area is super expensive. And I was just like, I just need something that I deserve monetarily and, you know, work-wise. Like, I'm not being fulfilled here. But the team there was amazing. I love all the people there, and came back home to save up some money, help around the house, fix up the truck, because I had been in a crash last year that I, you know, am so blessed to have walked away from alive. And yeah, just been here for the past 4 or 5 months, saving up and getting ready for the next big jump in my life. Because I've always,
is the next big jump?
Wherever God takes me. I've always been, every time I go to church during college and wherever, I'm seen by people and they're like, oh, what's your next big adventure? Cause I'm always in LA or New York or DC, and they never get to see me. So I guess I'm known around the church as like the child of Nancy that goes, and we'll see him when the holidays. Yeah.
By the way, that's the other Nancy.
My mom's name is Nancy.
So at the church that we go to, there's at least three Nancys. So Malachi, what was your inspiration to begin creating music? I mean, a lot of young people love music, mm-hmm. right? I mean, when I was a teenager, I loved pop rock. I grew up in Muncie, so the big radio station, there were two radio stations a lot of people listened to on the AM dial, believe it or not. That was back when AM radio was still a thing. There was a station, or still there, I think, is WERK 990 Work in Muncie. And they played popular music. And then on the FM dial, a lot of the kids listened to Q95 in Indianapolis, which is still a thing.
Cool.
I listened to The Buzzard, which was WNAP.
The Buzzard is so sick.
Yeah, that station is still there, but it's no longer The Buzzard. I think it's, I don't know what it is now. I think
terrible
it's
choice.
It might be the country, Hank FM. That's maybe
a terrible decision. Keep it The Buzzard.
Well, you know, some people like country music.
I wasn't talking about, I'm not going to diss country, because I don't want no country listeners at my doorstep trying to bang the door down. Country is not really for me per se, but I'm just saying, keep the name The
Buzzard. Nancy doesn't like country music either, but she does like bluegrass, believe it or not.
That's, you know,
so it's one thing to enjoy music. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to go to the level of creating it. So what inspired you to begin creating music?
I can't really pinpoint why I started making music. I was in seventh grade when we had a family computer, iMac, whatever. And GarageBand is an app that comes on Apple products, whether it's iPad, iPhone, whatever. And I can't remember why I chose to open that app. I think I was just bored in one day and started making beats in seventh grade. And from there, I thought to myself, hey, this drum works cool with this random bass sound or this guitar sound. And from there, it was just picking up the things where I could. And the family iMac actually broke down. I forgot what happened to it. Maybe it fell or something. Or maybe it was just old. But when that broke, I was in high school at that point. And so it got to a point where I was, you know, in band class, if we're not needed in the section for a second, because we're not the focus, we don't need to work on anything, then we'd be in the back room in one of the practice rooms. And I'd ask one of my bandmates to borrow his iPhone, if I could just make beats on there for 20 minutes before we go back in. So I really can't pinpoint what in me said, hey, let's start making stuff instead of just listening to it. I was always a person surrounded by music inside the house. And a specific type of music, like you said, you know, in Kentucky, it's bluegrass. Everybody listens to country. But inside the house, I, you know, am a part of a Black family that's really into music. And my mom was playing Erykah Badu since I was in the womb. And, you know, dad is older, so he's listening to Funkadelic. He's listening to George Clinton, all those people. And Outkast was a crazy thing for my family because, you know, in their first tour, they came to Kentucky State University where my parents went. Mm-hmm. And it was like the first time that my mom heard Outkast, and she's been a fan ever since. So these really huge people.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Outkast too.
You see what I'm saying? Cool. So these huge people that now people are like, this is music. These are our giants in music. And at that time when it was first coming out, it was like, this is neo soul. This is rap. And people didn't even want to listen to Outkast at the beginning because they're from the South. This is not West Coast. This is the East Coast. This is the South. So these really weird sounds, these really different sounds were the things that shaped me. And they shape the way that I listen to music and the way that I create music now. So I think it's really being surrounded by that type of stuff where it's different from what everybody else is listening to.
Right. That raises another question for me.
Okay.
A couple of episodes back, we had a couple in, basically the group is Frederick and Ronza, and they do a lot of Motown.
Oh, wow.
And they do some, they're coming up with a blues kind of a blues concert that they do. So they do
awesome.
They do public concerts a lot. And we went to their concert on the Motown thing in Greenwood here just a couple of weeks ago.
Sick.
They're really fun couple and really creative, but they're Motown, they're blues, that kind of thing. How would you define your music? What kind of music genre would you think that it would fall into?
I hate answering this question so much.
That's why I'm asking.
I don't know.
Because I listened to it, right? I mean, you told me it's on Spotify, and you sent me a link to one specific song that we'll talk about in a minute. But, you know, I'm listening to it, and I'm like, well, this isn't exactly what I was expecting.
Yeah.
It's, I couldn't define it. So now I've got to ask you, how do you define it?
I don't,
gosh, dang it. Go ahead.
I don't even know, man. I really don't. I have a certain ear for things, right? I think of some of the people that influence me and my sound now are Tyler the Creator, people like that, or Steve Lacy or Matt Martians. And when I hear Tyler the Creator talk about when he creates music, he thinks of chords. Chords are in his head when he is creating something new. And for me, that is bass. That's the bass guitar, whether it's, or even not even bass guitar or 808s, just low end and drums, right? Because Erykah Badu, D'Angelo, Outkast, they have these crazy bass lines, these neo soul bass lines, chords, whatever, and really hard hitting drums, right? Like, this is a time where people were designing songs to bang harder in the back of the Cadillac. You know what I mean? So I really create with the bass drum kind of thing. So wherever that fits for me, it's just whatever happens. People call my stuff alternative. They call it R&B, neo soul, hip hop, rap, whatever, indie. But for me, I don't like putting myself in a box. I never have. And so with that, I create whatever I like listening to, whatever I want to hear. If I can do quote unquote indie, I'll do indie. If I want to do quote unquote lo-fi, I'll do that. Same with R&B, whatever.
Well, the interesting thing is that, you know, I listen to your Spotify stuff and then I listen to Sweet Vicky, which we'll talk about again there in just a few minutes. I'm like, well, those are two different kinds those very different kinds of songs. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of looking forward to when we chat about that.
Yeah.
But what does creating music do for you? I mean, do you do it because, you know, does it do something for you internally, emotionally? Is there something there that's you know, you understand what I'm getting
at? Yeah. And it also goes back to your last question. The genre, the way that I create, it's different. It doesn't fit what you think it will. And from all my projects, the first, you know, Dusty Orange, my first album, doesn't sound the same as Demo Nights, my last album. And for me, I don't want to make the same thing every time I create something. Like that's boring. That's boring for me. And I know that if
that's the box,
you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I like making something different. So in that, music for my creation is also, it's mainly, yes, getting my ideas out there, but it's therapeutic for me. I'm able to express my emotions really well, but sometimes I just like, blah, and I like doing that onto a song mm-hmm. or a bass line or drums and figuring it out that way. People can talk all day. People can write books and whatever. Mine is music. And so I've always been somebody that.
It seemed like one of your songs was just a lot of you and somebody talking about a relationship.
Yeah. My best friend, Kadari. Yeah. And sometimes it has to be that. It has to be therapeutic and getting my stuff out. Cause I think a lot of people hold stuff in, or they don't know the way that they can express themselves to get that weight off of themselves.
Right.
Because now it's life is heavy. Not saying life was heavy when you were my age, not to bring age into it. Let's still look at
when
like
I was
that.
Your age, how old are you? 23?
I'm 23.
I got married.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's what I did. I got married at 23.
But not to say life wasn't difficult back then. Like I can't even imagine the frame of mind. So am I. So there's one thing that remains the same. But it's hard because now people have so much weight on their heart, so much weight on their shoulders, and they don't really know the way to express that or get that off their chest. And that's a difficult thing. Life is hard. You want to be able to express yourself and live life with as minimal, you know, teeter tottering as possible. So I love creating in a way that allows me to get stuff off my chest, whether that's ugly, whether that's happy, whether that's good or bad. I don't care really what everybody else wants to say about my music because they didn't make it. This is me. You can't tell me how I'm supposed to make my thing. Yeah. You can say if my vocal wasn't mixed to the certain decibel and it doesn't sound good because the EQ isn't as high as it should be in the high end. Like you can tell me stuff like that because I'm thinking about that anyways. I just have a high standard for myself and the stuff that I create, but the things and the subject matter and the context into which I put stuff in, like some of my songs on Demo Nights, the content of what I'm singing or rapping about does not fit over this Pink Panthers type, like just hyper space beat that is, but for me, that's what my brain and my heart is connected to. So it's really just figuring myself out. And I feel like with Dusty Orange, my first album, it was not mixed as well vocally, but the beats were all just hard and just groovy. And then with Demo Nights, I went weird and I'm, you can hear my voice better because I need somebody to, not that I need somebody to hear this, but I need to be able to have this clearly said on a slate where I can be heard. And the reception of when I released that album was so amazing. People that I don't know DMing me like this song, I feel this so deep in my heart because this is exactly what I felt 2 years ago. This is exactly what I went through 3 months ago. And you were able to capture this. And it's just like, keep doing this.
Right.
So it's really special to be able to create something that I just need out there to not have inside and just being able to like, okay, cool. On to the next. Cause it's emotions. I'm continuing to grow. I'm a young man that's, you know, started this when I was in seventh grade and now I'm feeling emotions that I couldn't even imagine that I would feel at the age of 23. And that has to be translated somehow. I'm not just going to write books like this. I'm going to choose music. So it's really a special thing.
Very cool. Well, let's talk about Sweet Vicky.
Okay.
So tell me the story about the song Sweet Vicky.
Yes. Okay. Well, my girlfriend's name is Victoria. And she doesn't like when I call her Vicky now. When I first met her, I was able to call her Vicky. But now that we're dating, I'm not allowed to call her Vicky. It's very weird. You should ask her about it. I could get her on the phone, but it's whatever. So we made this. First off, let me back up.
Okay.
We've been working on an album, and it didn't even start off as an intentional thing. She knows that I made music. She's been to a concert before we started dating. And apparently she was, you know, in the crowd like, oh, who's this cool dude? And actually, let me preface by saying in college, apparently I was a part of the cool artsy club or clique or what, not even a clique, but around campus, I was known as, oh, he's the cool, you know, music guy and blah, 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 blah. Like, and she was like, oh, he's too cool for me. But I was like, bro, you are so cool. Anyways. So yes, so she's been to a few of my concerts. She knew that I did music, and we have mutual friends that do music. And so when we started dating, I would still, you know, I need to do music just to, you know, kind of get through a day or get through a certain period of time. And we started having dinners on Sunday nights. And so she would come to my apartment and we would cook dinner. And after dinner one night, I think it was like late December, I was like, hey, let's just make music together. Because if I'm expressing my emotions, I want you to be able to express them with me. I want you to be in this relationship that I have with in a sonic form. You're a part of my life in a very special way, in a way that I love. And I just want to, you know, be able to create something with you. And so we started making beats together, some Sunday nights, sometimes. And it's different because I guess as somebody that has released stuff, she kind of feels like it has to be to a certain level because you're just so good. I'm like, dude, let's just make something. And so we made enough things that were weird and cool. And I was like, huh, that's kind of sick, to where we're like, what if we make a mixtape? And it started off as a mixtape. It was just like random stuff. We'll have three or four songs, whatever. Cool. Make little CDs, burn them on the CDs and give them to our family, whatever. But it got to a certain standard where I was saying, like, this deserves to be heard by more than just our family. These are really cool things. I haven't released anything. You haven't released anything ever. So let's just, you know, make an album. If people want to listen to it, cool. If not, cool. But we'll talk about ourselves. We'll talk about real stuff. We'll make random songs with my brother on it or Dorian on it. And that's just how it came to be. And Sweet Vicky was made in the summer. So I went to Amsterdam with her. She had her family's from Germany, her mother's side. And I went to Germany to go visit her and her family during this family reunion thing. And after that, we spent our anniversary week in Amsterdam. And we were adventuring, going to see Amsterdam. She's been there many times before, whatever. Her sister used to live there for college. And I picked up the acoustic guitar. Or actually, I think she did. And she just started playing chords because she had these random chords that she had and made a song for me. And I was like, oh, cool. So she started playing a song. I was like, this is amazing. And fast forward, we're making the song and it just kind of came together. And I think when you listen to it, you can kind of hear that it's just really organic and raw. And there's nothing that we tried to do. It's just there. And so, yeah, that's Sweet Vicky. We made this when we were in Amsterdam. Just when we got back from eating Ethiopian, that's our tradition. Our first date was eating at an Ethiopian restaurant. And so every month eat at Ethiopian restaurant.
Say that three times really
Ethiopian
fast.
Ethiopian restaurant on the 18th of every month. So that's our tradition. And yeah, we made that song on that day.
Can we share that song with my audience?
We can. She gave me the thumbs up.
Oh, well, good.
I'm definitely let me ask my wife first kind of guy.
You're not married yet.
No, I'm not, but I'm just, you know, just
is there something I didn't
know? No, I'm just saying, okay, all right, let's see now.
All right, so here we go, folks. This is the world premiere the song Sweet Vicky. Hope you enjoy it.
Yeah!
So sweet, sweet Vicky, I'm on the rooftop shouting your name. Oh sweet,
how sweet,
sweet Vicky,
so sweet,
I'm on the rooftop,
I'm on the rooftop
shouting your name.
And I'm out in Amsterdam, and I'm walking with my man, how lovely. Astrotram, how lovely to be yours. We're playing checkers. What's your next move? Some people stay between the lines, but with you I like breaking the rules. So sweet, sweet Vicky, I'm on the rooftop shouting your name. Oh sweet,
how sweet,
sweet Vicky,
so sweet,
I'm on the rooftop,
I'm on the rooftop
shouting your name.
It's been a long road.
Long road.
We've come so very far.
Come so very far.
I see you shouting on me.
Hey.
And I wanna say, I love you.
What a cool song.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing it with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I was listening to the other songs and then you sent this over to me in an email and I popped it on and I'm like, oh man. Oh man, that's a good song.
Thank you.
After hearing that song and feeling that song, mm-hmm. And just the sweetness between you and Victoria. And Victoria, thank you for being willing to share that with us and with our audience. You haven't released it in an album yet.
No.
But you're going to.
Correct.
So talk to me about how you do that. How do you produce the track? Mm-hmm. And how do you get it out to the world so other people can enjoy it?
So all the instruments that you hear on this track are things that we recorded ourselves. The acoustic guitar, the shaker, that was me whistling. Like that was her, you know, doing everything. Singing was all us. And I had brought my mic with me to Germany and my audio interface. Like that's what you need to record. Before that I was recording Steve Lacy style straight into, the old iPhone, that one of my good friends had given me in high school. But for me, I am at a point now where I got some money and I got a cool mic and audio interface. So I brought that with me to Germany because I knew we wanted to record something and work on the other songs that we had for the album. And the album didn't feel quite finished. It didn't feel like us as much. And so her dad is really into instruments and just, you know, if you go to the house, he has like this African string bass that is like nobody else has, and these shakers and these, like, he's just one of those people. So he left it all with us when we went to Amsterdam and we just picked it up and started playing this stuff. And I recorded her, and there's a music video to this that kind of shows you us recording that'll release when the song releases.
Did a video too?
We did. We're big camcorder junkies and we were like, oh, let's just record each other doing stuff. Like it's just one of those things. So yeah, we have a video for it of us and our time in Germany and Amsterdam, and it's really sweet. No pun intended. And so, yeah, we recorded that with the mic and the audio interface, and we put headphones on her, and she's obviously new to this world where she's not used to hearing her voice and singing like that, but she has an amazing voice.
Clearly.
Yeah. And the confidence as we're creating this album has been it's grown exponentially, and it's been so fun to see her get confident in a realm that she's not used to. And me telling her to just go for it, sing your heart out with this lyric, and her having that confidence to do that, it really translated onto this song. And so when we get to a point where we're ready to release it, I use I don't even know what it's called, a sharing app kind of software site. It's called DistroKid.
What is it again?
DistroKid. Correct.
Okay.
And so once you've mixed everything, you've mastered everything, that's what we're in the process right now, mixing and getting ready to master it, because we want it to be the best that we can do, not on any standard of whoever's releasing whatever. We just want it to be cool for our ears. You get ready and you put it on DistroKid, and then you get to choose the cover art for it. You get to choose the name and all the credits and who did what and how much of a percentage you want to go to this person, and we'll split it all 50-50. That's just logistics, whatever. And then you can send it to all these places, and you can just, with like a couple of clicks of the button, you can send it to Apple Music, Spotify, YouTube Music. I don't know what else is out there. TuneIn. I don't know.
So your music is on Spotify, what you've released so far.
Correct.
Is on Spotify. Do you get paid for that, or is it just out there for fun?
I get some residuals. It's the thing nowadays where Spotify pays you a 0.001% of a cent just to, you know, have a song out there for every stream. And I don't really do it for money. I've never really done it for money, but Spotify does pay me. So all the money comes in through DistroKid. But like I said, I don't do this for money. I've always made music on some level. I guess when I got to college, actually, or late high school, getting to a point where I'm just individualistic and I'm like, God, I don't care what anybody else thinks. That's just the way I was raised. That's who I am. To a point where I don't release stuff to get the yays or the nays. Mm-hmm. I got to be center level with myself, because as I said earlier, I do this for me. So it's just for me. And I always said that I wanted to release this music and just have music to where, when, Lord willing, if I'm a dad, my kids can listen to this music and be like, oh, my dad was so cool and he released music, and like, look at this thing that he had, and he's just like the coolest dude ever. Like, that makes me so happy to think about. And so, yeah, I don't really think about how much money I think in the past 6 months, I've gotten like $9 from everything.
Sounds like my royalties for book sales.
You see what I mean? Like, it's just, it's to a point where I may or may not ever be to a level where I'm selling out crowds and whatever.
Well, you know, I can just, listening to the Sweet Vicky song, and, you know, now that it's going to be, as of Monday morning, when this releases, you know, there's going to be people hearing it for the first time out there. There may be some people who want to hear it again. Mm-hmm. So when do you anticipate that song being available for people to listen to, and would Spotify be the best place to go listen to it, do you think? Or is there a way that they can download it and pay for it?
Yeah, everywhere that you listen to music, anything that you listen to music on, you can listen to it there. And
do you have a Hulander channel on Pandora?
I probably do. I don't know. I have never checked Pandora since like 2013 when my teacher was
I'm an old dude. I listen to Pandora.
I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to say anything about Pandora, because I don't need them at my front doorstep trying to knock my door down. But we plan on releasing it. We're still in the works with it, and we're still in the mixing processes. But early January seems like the best point for us.
Early January 2025.
Correct.
Okay.
Seems like the best point to us. We had thought about releasing it about like 3 weeks ago, and we just weren't at the point where we were happy with the mixing process. And then we thought about it, you know, like kind of this week, and that was what was on our calendar. But the election, we just wanted to have everything have its time, because when you release something, everything has to have its moment, and there's a good time. I forgot the verse, but there's a time for everything. Mm-hmm. Right. And it just doesn't feel like the right time to release an album about, oh, I love you, you love me, we had this stuff. And
there is never a bad time to release a love song.
And that is wisdom from Brother Mike DeCamp. And I appreciate that.
So people find you under the name Hulander.
Correct.
Right? Not under Malachi Quarles, but under Hulander.
Correct.
So let's spell that out. H-U-G-H-L-A-N-D-E-R.
Correct.
So if you want to go to, folks, if you want to find Malachi's music, go to Spotify and type in Hulander, as I just spelled it. It'll come right up. And in January, you'll be able to pull up Sweet Vicky.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
It's pretty awesome. So where do you see yourself taking this in the future?
Taking music?
Yeah. Yeah. Where are you going to go with this? What would you love to see happen?
Or
besides making your kids think you're just really cool.
I mean, that's the ultimate coolest thing ever to me. But in terms of creating music, it's weird now that I'm out of college, and I feel like in college, everybody has this thing where it's, you know, your parents tell you this is the best time of your life because you don't have any responsibilities, really. You don't have any bills, really. You got no dependents, whatever.
You really don't.
Yeah. In college, I was like, oh, it'd be so sick if I was able to, you know, go to Australia and just throw a random show and people that don't know me just hear this music. They're like, oh, this guy's kind of cool. But now I realized, and this is part of me growing up, I'm just a creative person. I'm a creator. That's what, you know, God put in me, and that's how he created me. So I'm always going to create no matter how old I am. And I always see this reel come up of Miles Davis. He's like, and the interviewer is like, how much do you think about music? Do you really love it? He's like, yeah, I love it. I can't get it out of my head. And that's really me. And you can ask anybody. I've always been the restless person tapping my finger on my pants to get a beat out, or just a random drum rhythm, or just and just making random things, melodies with my mouth, or beatboxing. And that's been me for the longest time. And coming to a point in my life where I realized, like, I'm just a creator, point blank period, at the end of the day, whether somebody hears it or not. So I kind of got out of the place of, okay, I need to go and do 5 shows a year just so that I'm getting bigger and people hear me and blah, 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 blah. I'm at a point now where I'm cool with releasing. I'm cool with making videos. I'm cool with still having my clothing line and making new stuff with that. Why? Because I'm a creator. I'm going to do that regardless. So
there's something we didn't even talk about.
I mean,
clothing line.
Yeah.
That's something else.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have you back to talk about the clothing
line. I'm fine with that. You're like 15 minutes away from the crib, so it's easy.
Yeah. So it's, that's pretty cool. I think creating for the sake of creating.
Yeah.
And you know, you get your own catharsis out of creating. I find that when I'm writing the books that I write,
yeah,
that, you know, it would be nice if I sold a lot of them. Mm-hmm. It would be nice if some producer from Hollywood said, hey, I want to make a movie of this, that would be awesome. I would be totally excited. But the bottom line is that I just enjoy the process of creating the stories.
Yeah.
And then having, you know, if a few people read it and they're like, man, I really like that, man, that just makes my day.
For sure.
Right. So it's just if I make a lot of money off of it, that's a nice side thing. But at this point, it's just about creating for the sake of creating. Yeah.
And who it's for. Like, I realized that this thing, everybody has their day. Not everybody's going to live forever. And who is the being that will, right? And I've been raised with the certain faith that, you know, you are able to do everything through Christ. So do everything for Christ, right? So at the end of the day, when everybody's gone and the ether is just there, this music is going to be for who? The people that said, oh, this was whack. Or the people that said, oh, this was cool. This is amazing. Like, no, this is for somebody that put this ability in my body and allowed me to feel these things and see the world a different way. And not only see the world a different way, but be able to react to it and express it in a way that not everybody can, and the way that I can. Because not everybody's going to make the same music. Not everybody would make the same choices that I've made. And I make something like nobody else in the world can, right? And
right.
If God made me with this certain specific individuality, why shouldn't I make it for him? Why shouldn't I give it back in a way?
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's time for the random question.
Okay.
Now I have to get the random question box out. I have this random box. It's got a handful of questions in it. You just pull it out. You read it. You answer it first. And then I answer it also.
This would be a great moment for the drum roll on your pad if there is one.
Let's see how we can turn it up. All right, you ready? I don't know if I have a drum roll. I have a...
There we go. That was good. I like that. Okay, here we go. Do you believe in UFOs/aliens? Why or why not? You know, bro, I'm not going to lie. I may or may not believe in them.
No, that's no answer.
Exactly, exactly. No, I'll answer it. I kind of do. I'm not going to lie, because I think if enough people say they want to believe something because they saw it, and it's so much so that the government was hiding it for a long time, and then this year / last year, they were like, bro, we've been lying to y'all. The UFOs, they high key exist. And there's evidence for it. It's hard for me to give an answer, because it's just one of those things where I have enough stuff in my brain to where I don't need to think about UFOs. The movies Men in Black are cool. That makes me kind of think about it and be like, yo, this could be real. And I don't know. Neil deGrasse Tyson kind of talks about it sometimes.
Yeah.
He's cool.
Yeah.
So I kind of, I don't know. I don't know if that was the best answer. UFOs, aliens. I'll say UFOs. Yes. Aliens, I don't know, because aliens could be, what if they're just angels, you know what I mean? And they're just visiting people. Or what if UFOs are the little dogs that have human voices like in Men in Black? I don't know.
Yeah, or maybe they come from an alternate dimension instead of outer space.
Exactly. There could be a Malachi with,
Or maybe there's a deep sea civilization we don't know about.
See,
and
what I'm
saying? They come visit us in ships that, like, we go in submarines, they go in ships that exactly. Fly in the air. So,
and my thing
is, who knows?
My thing is, we call anything that is different aliens. We call each other aliens. So who am I to say that aliens can't come from, underneath the sea? And you see? And that was really what's about. You see, we got the sound effects. Mr. Mike DeCamp is on the sound effects. Even without Miss Nancy, he can still hold down the ones and twos. And I'm just here singing the blues.
Well, look at you.
You see?
Look at you. You're creator. Throwing some rhymes in there.
A creator.
Okay. Now I have to answer the question.
Okay. Yes.
And the fact is that if you've listened to this podcast very long, I've probably answered this question before.
Okay.
But the answer is... yes.
Okay.
I do believe in UAPs or UFOs, whatever you may want to call them. And it's primarily because I saw one.
Oh, wow.
As a teenager.
I never heard the story.
I was all my friends and I were, we had this field that was kind of in between all of our houses. Mm-hmm. And we would always go back there. We'd play baseball. We'd play football. Everything we did happened mm-hmm. in that field. And we were out there. Sometimes we'd be out there at night. Mm-hmm. And we could see the bats flying around, and just things we would do, mm-hmm. stupid teenager stuff. One night we were out there, and there was this light, and it was stationary. It was straight up, like 45 degrees mm-hmm. angle from where I was standing. And I'm looking at it, and it's just stationary. It's just sitting there. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it shot to my right, to the south so fast. It just, boom, disappeared.
Wow.
It was so fast. Now, I didn't see a flying saucer. I didn't see rotating lights. I didn't see all that. But the fact that it was stationary, not moving.
Yeah.
And then, boom, shot off so fast. It's faster than any airplane I'd ever seen.
Can be a shooting star, because a shooting star is going to be continuous.
Yeah, it's going to be continuous.
I'm seeing what you're saying.
It's not going to make a right turn.
Yeah.
And usually they got some sort of a burning look to them if you see them very close.
Correct.
And it was faster than any airplane. Mm-hmm. We didn't have drones back then. I'm an older dude. Right? Drones back then. And, it wouldn't have been a firework because it was stationary before it shot off. So it was kind of weird. In fact, I was watching a TV show on Netflix the other day mm-hmm. about UAPs or whatever. And they showed a clip of one, and I thought, that's exactly what I saw.
Oh, man.
It was crazy. And the fact that they've got, now they're having actual congressional hearings.
Correct.
With people who actually worked for the government researching this stuff. And they're saying, this stuff is real. Mm-hmm. Now, you can still doubt it. I suppose anybody could. They still don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Some things are still explainable. But, I tend to believe that there is, that UFOs are real. And it's a real issue. It's a real, not issue. It's a real phenomenon that has legitimacy behind it.
For sure.
We just don't know what the details are.
I believe you more than the government. I don't think the U.S. has trusted the government since Nixon, if we're being honest. I wasn't even alive back then. But think about it.
It might go back further than Nixon.
So exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Actually, I'm old enough to remember Nixon.
So I believe you more than I believe them.
So. All right. So now that I've basically shot all credibility for anybody out there, for myself. So let's go ahead and I guess we're gonna bring this episode to a close. Okay. Malachi, this has been a blast. Yes, it's been fun hanging with you and talking music and listening to Sweet Vicky, and hope one day to meet Sweet Victoria.
Absolutely.
So I appreciate you being here and being part of the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Now, folks out there listening, this is being recorded before Thanksgiving. It's going to release the week of Thanksgiving. That's the plan. And then probably our next podcast, likely, it very well could be the something we used to do regularly. We would get all four of the DeCamps, my two daughters and my wife and I, and we would do a family like year-end wrap-up podcast.
That's awesome.
We haven't done it for a couple of years. We are planning to do one this year. So I don't know if it'll be the next episode after this one or the one after that, but we do have that coming up. The other thing I will mention to you is, hey, I am an author, right? So in the intro to this podcast, it talks about that. And in the outro, it talks about that. But we're coming up on holidays. People buy gifts for each other at the holidays. And I just got to say that my books really do make pretty good gifts for people that read.
This is amazing.
So you all have people in your lives who like to read, and some of them like fantasy and dark fantasy, and some of them like monster stories. And frankly, folks, I've got the books for them. Please hit me up or go to Barnes & Noble or go to Amazon. They're all available. They're available in your local bookstore. You know, maybe they're not on the shelf, but they can still order them. You can still get them in time for Christmas. So please remember Michael DeCamp when you're doing your shopping, and keep me in mind. And then lastly, I just want to say thanks to Bill Whitehair for being my post-production dude that gets everything kind of finalized and put online. So thank you very much, Bill, for all of that. And folks, thanks for listening in on this episode of the Cutters and Notch podcast. We will see you again, or you'll hear us again, really soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Cutters and Notch podcast. Your hosts have been Michael and Nancy DeCamp. Michael is the author of several fantasy thriller novels and short stories that can be found on Amazon or ordered through your local bookseller. Visit www.authormichaeldecamp.com to learn more. His most recent release, The Purveyor of Death, Doc Moon Book 1, is a classic young adult horror novel and the first book in a new series. It's guaranteed to keep you turning pages. Nancy is Michael's number one fan with a love and appreciation for creativity everywhere. The Cutters Notch podcast is available through most podcast listing providers. Subscribe to catch each new episode as it drops. You can reach us by sending an email to michael@authormichaeldecamp.com. Join us again on the next episode of the Cutters Notch podcast.